Hello and welcome to Essential Dissent, coming to you from the last days of the U.S. Empire. I'm Wilton Vaught, producer of the series. This episode is Breaking Free from the Ecocidal War Machine, a conversation between Metal Yaniv and Sarah Nahar on April 24, 2024 at the SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry, also known as ESF, in Syracuse, New York. Quoting from the event's publicity blurb, Metal Yaniv, an ex-Israeli ex-Zionist, will read from their book Bloodlines, an in-depth look into the Israeli identity and the apartheid regime. Bloodlines is a prayer and love letter to Palestine and describes Yaniv's journey of untying, dissecting, and restructuring the knots that hold them to the land of Palestine. Metal will talk with Sarah Nahar, a PhD candidate in religion and environmental studies at Syracuse University and ESF, who formerly lived in Jerusalem, Palestine. Together, they will connect the ecocide, genocide, and apartheid regime in Palestine to the fight for environmental and land justice globally.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for choosing to be here in this place. At this time, as is protocol, we begin with some acknowledgments, and I want to begin with an elemental acknowledgment of the earth, which is also your body, the water, which is also your blood, the air, your breath, and fire, your spirit. Thank you for existing, for continuing to choose to show up, to be yourself in this fabulous earth at this very fragile and precarious moment, but also extraordinary moment to be alive. And part of this moment, which we find ourselves on this Earth Week here at ESF, is one of intense war. And genocide is ecocide. The earth is also suffering. On this 201st day of the most recent assault that is built on so much grief and destruction, but not only in Gaza, also right here. And so we acknowledge our connection to that ongoing war. And we acknowledge, most of all, though, that which keeps life going here. And so it is with all honor and respect for the past, present, and future elders of the Onondaga, here indeed is a place of ongoing life, death, and decay, and more life in a holistic rhythm. So we honor that, and we honor those who have taken such good care. And so may everything we do today be a blessing. It's good to be with you. My name is Sarah Nahar. I'm a PhD student here in environmental studies and also over at SU in religion. And I'm joined by a new and dear friend. We've only known each other for about maybe 743 lifetimes, but we just met in the flesh again today. Metal Yaniv. And we will share with you a little bit about the bloodlines that move us, that bind us, that free us. So I want to give the first word of our conversation to you, wherever you'd like to go with it and take it, being here. Welcome.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you for everything you are carrying with you into this space right now and everything you moved through today that brought you here, and for taking this time to be here. I just learned about the grief beads, threads of beads in the stories of the peoples of this land. And I want to invite grief to break us apart, break us open, break us deeper. I really hope that this conversation will break our hearts a little bit more so that we can show up in this moment where our kin are being slaughtered in the West Bank and in Gaza and inside Israeli prisons, and our kin on university's lawn are being brutally arrested right now by police in riot gear that was trained by the Israeli soldiers both on Turtle Island and on the Holy Land of Palestine. And to really sit with the knowing that there is no here and there. And may that heartbreak shape us into the ways in which we can imagine otherwise. And may this conversation be of service to that imagining. So thank you all for being here, and thank you, Sarah, for meeting me in the flesh once again.
Could you say a word more about these breaking hearts in the sense that we can break open or break apart? And it is difficult to break open and not break apart. So any further thoughts as we navigate these waters of grief, soils of grief, breath, and the burn of grief?
I think I want us to break open and break apart. I think our hearts have been covered with so many layers of separation and walls of asphalt and cement and shrapnel and shells and prison walls. And, you know, I say that my indoctrination into the Israeli soldierhood really started in the womb. Like, I really somatically feel like that uniform got stitched on my body as my body was forming into a body. And there's so many metal layers that covered my heart by the time I left the womb. And so much had to break for me to even, like, get in there. But I think when I say break apart and break open, like they happen at the same time. I think grief, returning to practices of grief, known and unknown, seen and unseen, practices that this earth holds, secrets that have been buried. When we return to grief, when we return to tending to death, when we return to being with death, when we return to bringing our identities to their death, especially the colonialist one, especially empire ones, like empire in this moment is on its deathbed. And I support people who are transitioning and are taking their last breath. And a lot of the time that last breath is people fight in that last breath. There's a lot of effort in it. It's not an easy breath. Letting go is not easy. And I really think that empire is in its deathbed, and that death rattle, that last breath, is so extremely violent because empire doesn't want to let go. And we're experiencing that vibration. So I think in that breaking apart, we get to undo, but we also get to be not knowing, right? So I say a lot that as people who carry an Israeli identity or even a Jewish identity, we don't get to imagine Palestine when Palestine is free, but we get to imagine ourselves healed when Palestine is free. We are living in our wildest imagination right now. We've arrived. And it's, as we know, pretty horrific. So we cannot imagine Palestine when Palestine is free from this vantage point. So much has to die, so much needs to break apart, so much needs to break open. So we get to imagine ourselves heal and do the work to get there. And in the work to get there, we must be in not knowing. We must be in not knowing what's next, but knowing that, like, this is the only way. That there is no other way for us to arrive there without creating this cycle all over again. So, yeah, so maybe break apart and break open. And may we don't know how to, trusting that spirit and earth and the elements that you've connected to us in the beginning of this deepening will shape us. They're already in us. They will shape us. And trusting in not knowing what that looks like, feels like, trusting that our senses can sense us until we're in it. So I think in that breaking apart, there's a deep not knowing that is very uncomfortable. And I think it's really time for us to be extremely comfortable with discomfort, especially as people that sit in these identities.
This sense of decay, composting, you know, really allowing this to be a part, rot, you know, allowing this to be a part of our lived experience or our sense of connection with the more than human world is really important and likely understudied, even at, you know, a place like this that focuses on the environment, broadly speaking. And, you know, even thinking about life cycles of institutions within empire or what might it mean to decay one's stock market portfolio. I mean, in some ways, this has been one of the asks of 315 Students for Liberation. We've been working on what's called divestment here, right? And we're in conversation about that, but thinking about that as a composting process, as a way of not continuing a sense of endless growth, but coming back to oneself through a decaying of the stock market portfolio. I've never said that before. This is what conversations do, you know? But yeah, and perhaps folks in the room already have memories of or practices of grief, or perhaps you're thinking, wow, I wouldn't even know where to start there. How would you recommend that many of us begin to die well?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to read something. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read the prologue of this book. I think it will help us. To the Bedouin people, the indigenous people of Palestine, to the Jalin, Al-Kabana, Al-Azazme, Al-Ramadin, and Al-Rashida tribes, to the remembers of the Nakba, Naksa, and the right to return, to the land of Palestine, to the olive trees, the beehives, the date trees, the sea tides, and murmur of fish, to the ones that swim and grow in the undercurrent of seaweed that knows no toxins, to the waters being met with cement walls that continue to break free. Thank you for showing me the difference between refusing to hold the gun and burying the gun in the ground, walking away along the distance of an olive tree root, looking the shadow in the eye. Grandparent fire, I am sitting in front of you on this solstice moment in conjunction with Jupiter and Saturn, the longest shadow illuminated by your huntress light. Grandparent fire, I offer you my body. I offer you my mind. I offer you my heart. I offer you my spirit. I offer myself to die. From this place of death, I call upon my blood lineages, ancestors. I call upon you at this time. I am your child and your elder, crawling a path of invitation to offer our trauma to the fire, to offer ourselves to this for this death. Our inability to tend to our trauma and heal it in our bodies has made us into murderers. We live to occupy. We brainwash our babies. We indoctrinate them into soldierhood. We hide behind an armor of uniforms. We raise us to die for the sake of our trauma, carrying this in our blood. I offer all of who I am for a new way, for a heart way, for this death. Please meet me here inside the fire. We can take care of this in a collective way. grandparent fire we offer ourselves to live. So I wanted to read this because I think it helps me explain a little bit deeper my connection to the land of Palestine, that really, to me, there are parts of me that only get nourished when I'm there in like ways that I can't even explain. And I am also preparing for the day that for right of return to happen, that I will help my family pack our homes and leave. And I want us to do that from a place of love. So if we do this from a place of punishment and shame and guilt, we will create another cycle where we play Germany, what Germany is doing right now. That's what we're seeing. This is moving from shame and guilt and punishment. But when we do it with love, there's actually reciprocity in that, right? It doesn't change the heartbreak, it doesn't change the hardship, it doesn't change the work that needs to happen. Like healing, repairing trauma is such hard work. I'm sure we can all agree on that in this room. But there's something about an offering that is reciprocal. And I say this because when we don't know what we need to give up for a new way, but we know that a new way is needed, we can actually give up everything. We will never actually be empty. So the only way any one of us can find true belonging is with this earth. Not with states, not with borders, not with armies, not with stock markets, not with any of that. The only way we find true belonging is with the earth. So what are we willing to give up to find that? I think everything. And in that everything, it really means everything. And it doesn't mean that, you know, we stop taking care of each other or ourselves. It means that we find those vibrations of love, of packing the home that I grew up in out of an act of love. It makes me think about Thich Nhat Hanh and love in action and the ways in which there are frequencies that can support us in those actions. So if you don't know how to enter a space of grief, if you don't know how to enter a space of what to do, I really would go inward first. And, you know, like I used to show up for Palestinian solidarity from a place of duty, of guilt, of I caused harm and I need to undo it. That was not actually showing up. That was showing up for all those other energies that we already talked about, shame, guilt, all those other things. Now I show up for Palestinian solidarity for myself, not out of selfishness, out of I truly... That is the only way I get liberated. That is the only way I get free. And from that place, I also don't burn out. But to be in that, there's so much grief. So really sit with it, with what is in you that needs to break, to grieve, to open. What is in you that you're too afraid to look at? Right? Like I, little personal note, I found myself in a little Zionist seder last night, unintentionally, and stayed for as long as I could. And I say this, I said this in different words yesterday as well. This notion of Jewish American folks needing the state of Israel to exist, yeah? Specifically Jewish Zionist American folks needing the state of Israel to exist. And really like thinking that their safety depends on that, yeah? it's actually what it's doing, it's killing us as Israelis. That's like the result of that dependency, of that obsession, of that need, right? So for that to shift, right, they first need to understand that the reason that they feel unsafe has nothing to do with a place called Israel or Palestine. Actually, nothing. It has to do with so many other traumas that have happened in the generations. Where does that grief live in those bodies? Like, that's what I want to find. That's what I want to help open. Can we, like, find the ceremony to grieve that so you can actually connect to Turtle Island where you're at and actually support this place, actually support land back here, actually support the grief that is here for you to, like, tune into instead of obsessively caring if I put an army uniform or wear a keffiyeh? Or what do I do with my body? Because you think that that has to do with your safety? So, and I'm using that example because it really helps us, I think, identify that we all have those grief imprints in us. And so much has been made for us to not be able to find it. Like, so many people have told us, this is about that. This is about this. You feel unsafe because of that. And we forget that it actually has nothing to do with that thing. So how do we find those strains of grief? Again, returning to the threads of grief. And that is, again, inner work. It's inner work. It can be collective work, but it's inner work. So if you're waking up in the morning these days and can't find grief, I want to help you find that. And it can even be on Instagram, to be honest. You know, it can be with the one photo that you saw that made you want to look away. Stay with it. Find it in your body. Why do you want to look away? It can be with anything you do in your day, right? Like, everything about this empire is telling us to ignore our feelings, our senses, our grief. Right? Undoing the Israeli indoctrination, really, I had to, like, find my senses again. It desensitized me completely. I had to find them again, and from that place, allow myself to be vulnerable with myself. Yeah? So I really returned to grief once and again, because I think we all have that medicine in us, and it's been so convoluted. And that's a part of the undoing that I think this moment is asking us to do.
And this grief story here that you're drawing on has to do with Haiwanta and the loss of many daughters to war. And that transformational willingness that he had working with shells and with grief, that when he encountered the peacemaker, he was ready to be broken open and to participate in something that helped create an incredible legacy of what it means for people here working together to sit with really long tensions, but not letting it break them apart, yet like figuring out on different levels, how do we take care of one another in really difficult times? Because if we do, in our wildest dreams, be able to stop these forever wars that are ongoing, not only in Gaza, but also, I mean, we need to call up Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, and the other ways that U.S. empire particularly continues insidiously to wage extractive war. If we're able to stop those, that means many more people will be alive. That means there's a lot more conflict to be had. And how you mentioned kind of how that connects with solidarity. I'm reminded of a quote attributed to Lila Watson, an Indigenous elder in Australia, that says, "If you've come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come because your liberation is linked with mine, then perhaps we can work together." Right. And so those negotiations continue, you know, when we recognize that we deeply need one another. I'm interested in the metabolization, and maybe that's because the particular type of composting I study is composting toilets. So I think about digestion, metabolism, and the nutrients that we create, that we can return to the earth, but currently our systems have us flushing and forgetting them and creating toxic situations downstream. And I'm all about trying to deal with our shit, literally and metaphorically. So I think about metabolizing grief, where it's very hard to study in a time of genocide. How do we hold these meaningful tasks that are in front of us, but they seem to, in the face of that Instagram photo, which we don't want to forget, they fall out, they go to pieces. And so we're wrestling with how to not even hold these two intentions, but how to be changed and to change our work. One group that I know about that does some of this metabolization is called Zokrot, which means to remember. And we have a big landscape architecture department here. I'm not sure if any of you have that major, but So these are landscape architects that are also thinking about right of return, UN Resolution 242, if I'm not mistaken. Y'all can check me on that. Is it 242, right of return? Yeah. And this is a type of resolution that wants to make space for anyone who has been evicted, displaced, or unable to return to the place to which they're connected. And many refugee populations, Syracuse is a refugee resettlement city, and so we've welcomed a lot of people who are potentially waiting their own return or figuring out what it means to live here. But Palestinians have not been able to access their right of return, which should have been granted to them a long time ago. And now that there are many, many generations, there's a question of what does return look like? Or some people say, we can't imagine it, so therefore let's not plan for it. But these folks at Zokrot say, no, let's think about it. If someone was displaced from a rural village that has now become a bustling city, is there a return to that bustling city or to a small rural village? What might they like, and how do we design for it? What do our spaces look like? What does accessibility look like? How do we hold memory of spaces that are being transformed? And I guess I really see what Zokrot is doing is some kind of metabolization of figuring out what life together, whoever chooses to be a part of that together, and what those self-governance aspects look like. So, you know, landscape architect students can think about, okay, how can I go intern with Zokrot, or how could I design here for a decolonized future past, right?
You're listening to Essential Dissent. This episode is Breaking Free from the Ecocidal War Machine, a conversation between Metal Yaniv and Sarah Nahar on April 24, 2024 at the SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry, also known as ESF, in Syracuse, New York.
What other types of metabolization? I mean, you did write a book, so y'all can get it back there. In many ways, I felt like I was sitting with you in your grief with this. So yeah, what other methods of metabolization and cultivation of belonging do you think about?
I want to read a piece about eating my own shit.
Oh, fantastic. Right on theme.
I came out of my mother's body naked. After they cleaned the blood and residues of life being made, they buttoned and zipped the army uniform on my infinite, infinite body. This uniform is significant. You never outgrow it. You never wash it. It is sewn to move with you, like second skin, like purpose. Wherever you go, it is upon you, awaiting orders. My conception is my indoctrination into soldierhood, raised by my blood, state, family. This is a collective measure, upheld by all fraction of society. A soldier's identity and mentality is something you are groomed for, and then you become it. That shape doesn't leave you when you leave the army. You need to consciously decide to leave your own identity behind, and that is a disorienting process of patience and grief. It is a departure from something your body knows as home. In a typical Israeli family, everyone who is under 17 is being groomed and brainwashed to become a soldier. Everyone between 17 and 21 is an active soldier. Everyone between 21 and 49 is a reserve soldier. Everyone above 49 is raising soldiers. The uniform fabric that is placed on our infinite body stretches until an armor is covering the whole of us. My uniform armor has penetrated all of my senses and has provided me with belonging, coordinates, orientation, and safety. Shedding it is the tearing of my own skin, and I can only break free at the pace of my nervous system, pace of my breath. The butterfly teaches me the way, eating their own shedding to grow stronger inside the cocoon. The stronger they grow, the more pain they endure as their body pushes against the edges. They eat their own shit to become, until by force of creation, of life, they break free and fly. It is a process of trusting without knowing. When I cross paths with a butterfly, I sing to them, "You made it." It is an act of conscious recognition, of gratitude for the deep medicine they share. I eat each piece of shit removed from my body. I eat the shit to transmute the toxins into freedom, digesting and offering it back to the earth. Each bite cracks my spine into deeper alignment, chewing slowly. Nothing true is immediate. Nothing true is immediate. Nothing true is immediate. So to add a few more words to that, I'm going to be eating my shit for the rest of my life because that's how long it will take, maybe even the next life. And what we're seeing in Gaza, what we're seeing soldiers doing, when we see this mass grave that just got found with bodies with their armed bound in their back as it lay there, the testimonies of torture that are coming out of severe abuse. And also, at the same time, Israeli soldiers are using photos of them inside Gaza, inside houses, with bodies that they are about to take into torture on dating apps. Those are the photos that are currently on Tinder, if you will open it in Tel Aviv. It helps them get more dates. That's what's going on. So we see the images of mass genocide, of slaughter, of severe abuse, of torture, and we see images that do not see it, images that pose with the torture, images that use the torture as the background of their dating app photos. It's not out of evil. It's out of training. That training is to not see Palestinians as human being, people deserving of anything, really, because they're not human being in the eyes of the soldiers. And that is not training that a soldier goes through in 3 years as they're, like, you know, in basic training or whatever. This is generational training. This is what we come out of the womb with. And I'm not saying it to soften what they're doing. Like, it's okay if we can fully find compassion. I think that's our work, to find compassion. But it's also okay if it's hard. But I want us to be in that tension. And I also want us to be in the tension that shit that we need to eat is also for them. When I'm eating that shit, it's also for them. They don't need to know it. I think they do in some way. But we're going to get free together. That includes the people that we are currently having a hard time finding compassion for. So there's work that we do for them, without them. And in that work, in that digestion, may we find compassion. And compassion is not necessarily about forgiving, right? Repair is not necessarily about fully understanding. Repair is about undoing it and helping find another way, right? So for me to undo this soldier identity, I need to keep eating my shit because that identity actually wants to live on. And it will, that pattern will, has already tried to remake it as like a soldier for justice. Same shit, different agenda. So there's ways in which this work is really work that we need to dedicate our lives to. And I wonder what happened if we all actually eat our shit. Like, what's that world? What is that, the next world? Is that like Olam Haba? Is that the next world? And how will that change the way that we understand each other or care for each other or hold each other, right? Like, as people who live on Turtle Island, I want to urge you all to really understand that the only way we stop Israel is from here. Like, you cannot keep waiting for us to eat our own shit. So the only way to stop this is with funding, because Israel literally cannot afford the genocide, the occupation, the apartheid walls, any of it. So I urge you to do that work from here. And I also urge you to eat the shit. So for those of you who carry Jewish, Israelis, identities, so that when that moment come, when we are being seized, that's also when we go back and help them eat their shit. Because again, we're going to get free together. So I make a joke that I found myself in a Zionist Seder yesterday, but it's also not a joke. And it's also, I don't believe in coincidence. So I was meant to be there. And one of those reasons is because it helps me find compassion, or it makes me so angry that the only way I can be with that is to be with that, and that helps me find compassion. So we have to also understand that there's like the places of tensions and edges, that's also where we do our work, right? So it's at multiple levels. And it's like the digestion of it. It's that.
Really dealing with it.
Yeah.
Right, not looking it away, not looking mm-hmm. away. Yeah. Thank you. Now is some time for us to collectively metabolize and share, and we'll have be able to take a few questions, and we want to use a modified stack, which is an extension in many ways of our acknowledgement, but the mic, first and foremost, is open to any Indigenous folks from here for a question. Then also more broadly, people of the global majority, Indigenous to other places who've been displaced here by hook or by crook. The crook is Columbus, but that's another story. Or it's the same story. Same shit, different agenda, different place. Indigenous folks from here, people of the global majority, people who are being directly impacted by what's happening right now, and then to the majority also. I'm going to insert one for youth under 18. We got some of them in the audience. So we have people from all these groups in the audience, and just want to make sure that all the questions that want to be heard can be surfaced, and that we make space for that.
I know you didn't ask a question, but may I offer something? Just because I'm hearing you speak and something wants to be spoken. Like, you know, the way that this empire, settler colonial armies are being trained can really, I think, for me, it helps me really, like, as a case study, understand again, in this place where there's no here and there, because for them, there's actually no here and there. They're training together. During the Great March of Return, 2018, when Palestinians from Gaza weekly march, walking peacefully with kites to the wall, and Israeli snipers were killing them, killing hundreds of bodies, but also, I forget the word in English when you shoot someone in the leg.
Maiming
entire generations as a mission. U.S. police was in those towers with them, being trained. And that is not a single occurrence. There's actually, Cup City, it's all around us.
A deadly exchange,
yes. JVP and Raya wrote this. But I'm saying this because I think it's like a hall of mirrors. In the same way that we can see what they're doing, it can also show us what we are doing. So we know that everything we're seeing in Gaza is already, and what's not already in a moment, is about to be implemented on specifically BIPOC folks here on Turtle Island. So it's almost like seeing the future as now, because it is now, and then we know what we do in response, right? Like, a few missiles are shot from Iran, and the Israeli airport is, people need a vacation, right? Palestinians don't go on vacation. They don't leave the land, because that's their fight for liberation, right? So how do we bring that here, right? How do we bring that prayer of this is our earth, this is our home, there's no here and there. How do we come back? How do we remember? And in that remembering, undoing to what needs to be undone. And again, return to the, indigenous people here, indigenous people in Palestine. There are ways that are already known in the bones of how to be here. So I hold your prayers, I back them up, and thank you. Thank you so much. I don't have any right to speak about anything except my own experience. I think we are all have suffered different traumas. I think in many ways we are all traumatized. I have done a lot of work to look at my trauma, the ways that it was formed, seeded, rooted. And in that healing process, that again, I never feel like I arrive anywhere. I think it's an ongoing process. I have obviously caused immense harm as a soldier and as an unconscious being. And as I return to my senses and as I return to this earth that I am a part of, that we are all a part of, I am holding a prayer for the liberation of the land of Palestine and the land of our bodies. And I am tending to this prayer, learning how to tend to prayer, and trusting that I don't know how, but I'm trying. And it is a very humbling process because I really don't know, but I must try. So because I was raised in an extremely Zionistic right-wing family, because I have, my dad is an Air Force commander, Holocaust survivors, Arab Jewish lineage that became recruiters for the Lehi, who's a known Jewish terrorist organization, famous Mossad agents. Like, I was raised in a very, very specific way. I voted for Bibi Netanyahu when I was 18 years old because I didn't know any better. So because I was raised in that way and because something in my body said no, after the first time I had to send planes into Gaza. And ever since, I've been in this process of trying to understand what I was raised to do and how can I undo it within, from myself. That puts me in a place today where I must speak. Because, first of all, I understand the Zionist Israeli mindset, so I can kind of understand where they're coming from. And I hope I try to speak to that. And also because I'm seeing this immense suffering that is being done for me. Right? Like it's in my name. And because of all of that, I'm finding myself now in a position where I'm doing my best to speak, so we bring this together to an end. Can I do it? I don't know. I'm tending to a prayer. I wrote a book that comes from that prayer, and I'm trying to share it. If it's not of service, I honor that deeply. If it is of service, may it be so. But I don't know what else to do other than try to speak. And does that give me a right to speak? I don't know. I really don't know. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for your question. I think that's how we find true happiness. I think grief, actually opening our senses to it, being with it, opening our senses, period, brings us into connection. Connection brings us into all of life. All of life has everything in it. Fire, water, earth, air, joy, sadness, happiness, ecstasy, grief. It's all... There is no life without death. There is no death without life. So that piece that I wrote, that I read in the prologue ends with, like, we offer ourselves to live. I think for me, like shedding these patterns, these conditionings, is actually allowing me to feel or get close to feel freedom, happiness, joy, belonging, in an authentic way. That idea of I don't know, in this society we're in, like what is even happiness? They try to sell us happiness through capitalism and other systems. I've personally never found happiness. I found moments of forgetfulness that made me think I'm happy. But in actually being attuned or more attuned, I'm in a moment where I am, in a process of losing a lot of my blood relations. And there's a lot of sadness in that, right? There's a lot of grief in that. But the more free that I get, the more that happens. Right? So I'm not saying that I'm happy about it, but I'm finding my true self. And in that, there's all of life.
We hope that it is at least enough food for your journey. At least enough for now. Returning to our gratitude for your choice to be here, your choice to continue to exist. And we learn from the Palestinian people around existence being resistance. Because we are in an era in which humans everywhere are being rendered dispensable And so the vibration of indispensability. These politics that come from that commitment, that vibration, that is one with life, has flowed in this place, and we hope that it continues to be with you. Yeah, this evening and every evening. These are days in which, you know, as we move more deeply into spring in the Northern Hemisphere, where there's a lot blossoming. And yeah, I want to leave you with that sense that our movements are blossoming. That we are opening up, yeah, with our senses to all that is. And knowing that that bloom isn't forever, but there is nothing at all that can separate you from this living body of earth. And with that, we end with the poem, Death. While you're looking for it, I do want to give a shout out to these toothpicks, which I learned today are birch. So there is like a tree, even in this toothpick, this smallest piece. And it's all energy. Everything from every scent today from any book that you decide to give some monetary energy towards will go to a medical camp just outside of Rafah that is seeking to heal so that people can live and die well and not die prematurely. And they're using whatever tools at their disposal to be able to try to help heal, stitch up, and care for. And so we're really grateful. Mittal has given their time freely for this event. And again, we're directing all the energy right now. We have some medical workers in the house. There is no here, there is no there in terms of the separation. But please do, even if you're like, wow, it's the end of the semester, I can't look at another book, it's okay, you can just send money. We'll try to get one for the library. Hand you the last word.
Thank you. Death prayer. A death prayer for the Israeli identity, with the utmost care and tending. An intentional death we offer ourselves. For the blood that only knows freedom, for the veins of truth and reconciliation, for the love that knows no walls. We are attached to unhealthy placentas, overgrown umbilical cords that were never cut thorough properly, placentas that with the oxygen and the nutrients provide the template of systematic oppression, genocide, and ethnic cleansing. Placentas that forgot to remove waste products from our bodies and instead fester in hate, shame, and silence. Gaslighting is the mother tongue of our society, and we drink our attachments as if fear had a thirst to fill. This is my offering for you, cutting the umbilical cord while you still need the feeding. This is where we meet. A dying identity can be a healing body. Placentas in the dirt, in the sea, under the olive tree your grandparents planted or burned or both. Hold the umbilical cord in your hands. Press it tightly. Feel the liquids that no longer reach your belly button. Breathe. Loop the cord around your hand and tie it one time. I am here next to you holding the scissors, sharpened by the fingernails of our ancestors, generational teething. I hand you the cutting tool. You free yourself, freeing them, freeing me, freeing the land. One word, one act, one intention. We create these ripples for the earth that we are. Your hunger is not real without a bubbling, guttural fear. This death I'm offering is not a murder of the self. It is a letting go of all you believe you are, an intentional decision to stop watering, letting it die while caring for it. It has been a year since I sat in front of grandparent fire offering myself to die, not knowing exactly how this prayer would unfold, but trusting in the embodiment of prayer. A lot had to die this year for this prayer to remain alive, practicing. There is damage here, but not sabotage. Feeling all of it at once, staying in wonder, reigning inside the body, be inspired. Feel the love so that when it is not in front of your eyes, you can embody it. Trust. We need to let the Israeli identity die without knowing an alternative. This needs to be a full death, no return, no vaccine, no prolonging. Our imaginations unready to imagine anew. We will never be ready without this first step of death, a death with no attachment or guarantee, a death for life itself. Lay on the earth with me. Circle yourself with the shrouds of the stolen ones. Feel your digestive system seize. Kidneys forget urine, and in the innards there is release. Fever chills accumulate along your spine. Your temperature drops to subterranean frost. Low blood circulation makes your limbs numb. Let the ants be a reminder you are too dirt. Hallucinations. Surrender to the collective vision of earth without you, of freedom with you. Death is here. You open. They receive you. Out of your nose and into my mouth. Out of my mouth and into the fire. Out of the fire and into the stars. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Essential Descent. I'm Wilton Vaught, producer of the series. This episode was Breaking Free from the Ecocidal War Machine, a conversation between Metal Yaniv and Sarah Nahar on April 24, 2024 at the SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry, also known as ESF, in Syracuse, New York. You can download this audio for free via radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4, all.net. Thanks for listening.